success is the greatest gift that I possess. I thank the Lord that I've been blessed with more than my share of happiness. To me, this world is a wonderful place. I'm the luckiest human in the human race. I've got no silver and I've got no gold, but I've got happiness in my soul. Happiness to me is an ocean tide, a sunset fading on a mountainside, a big old heaven full of stars above, when I'm in the arms of the one I love. Oh, happiness, happiness, the greatest gift that I possess. I thank the Lord that I've been blessed with more than my share of happiness. Happiness is a field of grain, turning its face.
Hi folks, thanks for downloading and listening to this podcast, the third in our occasional series. I'm really, really, really excited today because our guest today is a guy called Paddy Horan. I've known Paddy to be in audiences in Ireland from a way, way back at the beginning. And one of the things that would happen to me is that as I went into places like Ireland and started to grow Mindstore, you're looking for people in an audience who seem to resonate with you, who get it, who understand, who are giving you good feedback, both non-verbally during the presentation and at the breaks. And one of the guys that really excited me was Paddy, because he would always, if he was there in those early days, and he would come and give me encouragement. And I was ever grateful for that. But more importantly, in many ways, Paddy lives, for me, one of the sort of dream lives that we all kind of aspire to. But before we get into all of that, Paddy, welcome to the podcast and thanks for joining us.
Thanks, Jack. I'm always happy to hear your dulcet tones. I've been a Mindstore member for more years than I can remember, but it certainly has to be probably 20 or thereabouts. I've been to loads of courses, met lots of really good, energized people. You know, Mindstore has a following, I'd be part of that tribe. And I remember when I retired the first time. I've retired many times in my life, but when I retired the first time, I was asked by a competitor employer to come down to Cork for a bite of lunch, and as I was entering the building, I met some Mindstore people, and I just knew. And I said it over lunch, and they said to me, how did you know that? I said, some things we just know. But it's part of a tribe. It's part of a journey of self-discovery and discovery of all that there is to discover. It's life-changing and mind-changing.
Paddy, tell us a wee bit about yourself. Obviously, I got to know you being in the audience in those early days back there. Tell us a bit about where you were there, where you are now, what you've been doing with yourself. You've mentioned this wonderful thing about retiring early, and so some people might really aspire to that too and be happy to hear your story.
Well, you know, my dad told me you should retire as often as you can, and I've retired, I suppose, 3 or 4 times now. Clearly, you know, people who embrace change early, they are least affected by it. And you would hope that as we learn things going through life, that we would have the courage to take that step, to have the trust. It's about listening to yourself. And clearly, when I went to my first Mindstore course, I was one of those guys who very nearly didn't go back to work, who went home and packed my case and turned up in Glasgow and said, Jack, have you room for me? The Mindstore story, you know, grabbed my attention, and I got to read all sorts of wonderful books, and books are friends. But about myself, I'm an independent thinker. I'm capable of independent thought. I analyze things. I think above the eyes quite a lot. I listen. I'm a very, very good listener. My wife, of course, wouldn't agree, but but we'll have to live with that. And it, for me, the essence of success is being there, being present at whatever it is that you are doing at that point in time, to be the very best that you can. Whether it's sweeping a floor or designing rocket engines, you bring your whole being to that. And I mean, I would do any job. I've done many. I'd walk dogs if I thought I'd make money. But clearly, I only work with people that I like. because sometimes the job description can change, and sometimes the work can be far more onerous. And if you're working with good people, regardless of the troubles that are coming your way, if you're working with good people, you'll have fun, even in troubled times. And it's important, because if the future is going to be different, it's up to me. So, you know, I spent 27 years in banking. I had pretty much every position in banking. And then I just didn't want to do that anymore. And my boss thought I had been headhunted. And indeed, I was the following week. But I declined, even though it was a very kind and hugely generous offer, much more than I would have asked for. But I had decided that I didn't want to do that anymore, and I wanted to embrace change in my life and see where it would go. So I set up a management consultancy business, and that took me into various different industries with people I liked. People are hugely important in my life, good, wholesome people, and I'd go to hell and back with good people. I was asked to run a dental laboratory, and I said, listen, I know nothing at all about teeth other than I have a set, and they have been repaired. But the boss of the company said, well, listen, yeah, that may be so, but you're awfully good with people, and you certainly know how to run a business and how to make money. And I said, yeah, well, I know that. He said, well, you know, your skills are something we could badly use. And so I said, okay, and I took on the job. And a few years after, I would say within 2 years, I had done everything that I possibly could for them. And I said, well, listen, I'm not going to take a salary here or whatever. Let's move on. And I ran a management services company that rented apartments and commercial space that managed that. You provide security staff. You do management services for everything that would be involved in business of taking care of a building and renting it out and repairing it, all of that sort of thing. And I've taught sailing. I love sailing. I never feel more alive than when I have the wheel of a boat in my hand. And I've sailed up your part of the world, up north of Ardnamuchan Point. Primary objective being to gather some heather, tie it to the mast to return home and say proudly that you'd been to the highlands, you know, where the wild men are. But clearly, any job, work is a privilege. Why do we work? Well, you know, we work because we need to make money, to look after our families and all of that sort of thing. But we have a social need to work. You know, people who work remotely still go to the office on a semi-regular basis because, you know, we are social animals. We are pack animals and we're here to help each other. And, you know, so to interface with people, you know, you have to be there. But when you are there, you really have to be there. It's being that's important, and not really the time you spend there, but what it is that you produce when you are there. And I've always had a view that we're all a bit like football players. We're as good as our last game. So every time we want to make our last game a great game, because there may not be another one.
So, Paddy, given what you've said, did you find yourself ever using specific MindStore tools or techniques, or generally programming to expect to be the best you could be every day, or were you using some of our techniques? Anything about that?
Clearly, like many MindStore members, you were given a map, and it's very fortunate that you are given a map, because anybody who's traveling on a road, regardless of how familiar or unfamiliar it is, if you have a map and the technology breaks down, you have a map and you can return to the one and true path. So, yes, certainly, I would never, ever let the facts of a particular situation be the guide me to a final answer. I always think that, you know, you have to be careful of people who dream with their eyes open. And I'm a dreamer and I'm a hopeless romantic. So I do spend a lot of time dreaming, and I suppose in the real world you get sacked for that. But if you dream effectively, again, this business of programming and going into that little closet before that meeting to refresh the programming. And Muhammad Ali put that so well in his book about future histories. Mm-hmm. If you don't do the future histories, other people will write the history and you won't maybe like what you read. So if you create your own future histories and you act with love in your life, it just happens. It just works. That's your line. It just works. But it does. That's a startling thing. And regardless of how incredible or how big the mountain, once you have love in your heart and you're coming from a good place and you say, may the best for all concerned happen. Because, you know, this comes from the difference from being aware of self and the level of the mind into, I suppose, the path to an awakening that we are all connected. I wouldn't be a hugely religious person, but that's said, I would be very spiritual. My dad was a Roman Catholic priest for the last 13 or 14 years of his working life and some years thereafter. But clearly, in that regard, all roads lead to Rome. I recall a story that I heard many years ago. And again, I keep these little nuggets. They help me through life. I don't believe in reinventing the wheel. I believe other good people have come before me and learned things. And I use their learning with their permission to advance and raise my own vibration and the vibration of those around me. I remember a story about this widow woman and a certain parish priest who reprimanded her for not going to Mass or some other terrible sin. And she says, well, Father, it's like this. I've no problem with God. It's the buggers he has working for him, you know. So regardless of what faith you follow, the egos that are running these big organizations, it does, and there are many, I won't name them, but let me just say them all. Well-intentioned people who start out really well, but they get sucked into the daily work and then the regime that is there takes them over and they lose their purpose. So I believe that we're all connected and we come from source and we go back to source. We're all part of source. So I believe that I'm divinely protected. I was brought up as Roman Catholic, and they say you have a guardian angel, but I have two. And anybody who knows me knows why I need more. But it's simply this. I firmly believe in love, and fear banishes love. People let fear into their life, Jack, and it paralyzes you. You know, I did a lot of flying in my younger days, in my teenage years and early 20s, and it was mostly out of a small airport in the west of Ireland, which had a short runway and a gantry at one end and a major road at the other, a big railway gantry, and it was difficult with the local winds to get enough lift, depending on what aircraft you were flying. And you would have maybe one or two instructors there with you, and one saying to the other, gee, I don't think he's going to make it. Well, I wouldn't be sure, Tom, you know, and they're all goading you or whatever it is. But we never hit the gantry yet, you know, thank God. But until you hit it, you're still in control. And it's about being calm, and certainly I could take lessons in being calm and frequently give them to myself. But if you let fear into your life, you know, it undermines your whole existence and your love just seeps away, you know, and you get involved in other people's dramas. And I've learned so much from you, Jack, and from other good people that I've met in Mindstore. It's a fantastic organization. We should be building pillars to Mindstore because it's inspiring, and I'm very happy to be in the 1% of people who have found true happiness in my life. I get the opportunity to be rich in all the things that nobody can ever take away from me. My friends, the joy of sailing from one country to another, casting your fate to the wind. Will I tack today or will I leave it until tomorrow? And clearly, you know, you're on a journey in the biblical sense, and you get real companionship, you're all there serving the boat, wind and fuel, in the objective of getting to a general location over a period of time, be that hours, days, or sometimes weeks or months, you know, you feel a tight part of a group, you know, and there's no place for an ego. And of course, as skipper, you have to mind everybody. You have to get inside everybody's head and make them comfortable. Anticipate what it is that they might need, or a little bit of direction, or what, get to them before. Sailing can be exciting. It can be relaxing. You can be sitting around for hours and then moments of frenzied activity and raised voices, you know. Yeah. But it's a tiny piece of our existence. And if we think of the feelings that we experience there and we bring them back to our working world or into our families, it's just fantastic, because you have left your ego at the door. The ego causes an awful lot of trouble. And to do things, you know, it's lovely to have relationships and all of that. It's great to have friends or whatever. But a lot of those relationships can be codependent in one way or another. They're an existence of convenience. And if somebody does X, well, then you do Y and whatever. But I learned a long, long time ago to be in the selfless servitude of mankind, and to do it because it's to do something that, because it's the right thing to do, not in the expectation of anything in return, but, you know, not in the expectation that you can pat yourself on the back. I remember once giving a talk to a crowded room. It was a very short lecture titled In Praise of Elbows. And I said, listen, this is very simple. The reason that your elbow was designed in the particular fashion that it is that it does not allow you to pat yourself on the back. That's the job of others. But you can use your elbow to pat other people on the back, and you should do it as frequently as you possibly can. Find something that they're doing right and praise it, and give people a smile.
I'm grateful for what you're saying here, because there's a lot of life lessons in the last 10 minutes of what you're talking about. And that skipper is the mother listening, or the father listening, or the team leader listening, and so on. It's very, very powerful what you've shared. I'm also pretty excited about the fact you mentioned how fear destroys, you know, takes away the love. I mean, that's why one of the big things that riffs I ever did was to introduce tapping to the courses, and completely when I came across it, because what really inspired me about Roger Callahan's work was the fact that by simply tapping the keyboard of my body, my software in my brain, or subconscious, whatever it was, would dissolve fear and dissolve anxiety, and suddenly you're open to doing all sorts of stuff. And it was a big risk to change direction and introduce that. In fact, the first time I did it, a big place in London, when we were doing a business course, about 30% of the people got up and walked out because they thought it was bizarre. But the rest who stayed on got to love that. So I'm grateful for that. Also grateful for the fact that you've mentioned source. It's a word that I've been using a lot in recent courses. And I find even that standing in front of big business audiences when I'm doing the motivational speech thing, that if I ask them about, do they believe in the notion of being a connection to higher power, source, whatever they want to call it, and people have different names for it. And like you, I'm saying, I'm not talking about religion here. I'm talking about something different. I find that most audiences, with a very tiny minority, get that now and are willing to actually say, yes, I do get that. And so when we've developed the programs that I've been doing more recently, Whispers with Giants and so on, it's all about trusting that connection that we get to source in the alpha state. So one of the things that seems to me that, and I'm grateful for you mentioning also the sailing, because I you are living a bit of a dream of mine. We both had the joy of living abroad in France and so on. But what I love about what you do is you seem to get the time out to go and do fairly wonderful sailing adventures. And I know that when we are sailing, and it's been a big part of my life in the past, not so much now, that connection, as soon as you step on the boat, you leave everything behind. And if you're skipper, you're responsible in all sorts of ways. But there are just wonderful moments when you feel a total connection. And it's awesome. Do you want to say a wee bit more about knowing that you're connected to source and how it might empower you?
Sure. You've touched on a couple of things there that resonate with me. And, you know, it's about the joy. It's about being all consumed in what it is that you're doing. But you're reaching out with your feelings. a number of things. Certainly Roger Callahan's book I enjoyed, and yes, I tap out, and I've taught the technique to many people. The other thing that you should really do is get a very good kinesiologist into your life, which I did. Yes. 30 years ago. In other cultures, they use the word Namista, which in simple English to me is the divine in me salutes the divine in you. You know, that's why when you help others, you help yourself, because we're all connected. We're all part of this. That little piece of divinity that's in us is all going back into one place as a big ball of learning and love. To talk about the sailing and fear, I remember back in 1980, I was racing a boat for the Irish government up to, from Copenhagen to Amsterdam, up the Skagerrak and around or whatever, and into the North Sea. And any time I've been in the North Sea, it's been pretty much the same. Too little wind and then too much, you know. And we were really struggling, becalmed, and there were a lot of really big boats, huge yachts or whatever. Ours was only 54 foot, and as I say, it belonged to the government, not me. I was watch officer, and we got caught in a hurricane. We had 3 or 4 days of absolute calm, and then we had a couple of days of gale and severe gale, and then we had one 20 or 22 hour period of force 12, you know, where you have 50-foot waves and the most horrific conditions you can describe. You're looking at 160-knot winds, and the coast of Denmark is has cliffs on it. So it's too deep to anchor, and it was a lee shore we were blowing on, and we didn't have detailed charts for Denmark or whatever. So we had charts for Norway and the edge of Scotland, neither of which really were that possible. Norway maybe, but this was long before GPS. You were dealing with deck of chains and all of that sort of thing. And without getting too technical, most people would be familiar with how a boat capsizes. It goes from left to right or right to left. The mast will enter the water and maybe you get a lot of water on board or whatever, but it will right itself. But if you sail off the edge of a wave, it's called pitch pole. It's when the boat somersaults, and very often you don't survive that. So we had ropes and anchors and sleeping bags and everything that we could get to tie on to slow us down, because we were doing great speeds, and you don't want to sail off the top of a wave because it's 50 feet down, you know. So, and you're doing this at night in a wind that you can't stand up in, you know. You have to be secured to something or you won't be able to stand. And in any case, we fell off a wave, not off the top of it, but it fractured one of the diesel tanks, so that now when you went below, you were up to your hips in salt water and diesel, you know, in absolutely horrific conditions. So that's real fear, that's terror. Yeah. But if in those extreme conditions you can't keep a clear view, be succinct, if you can gather all your concentration to get through an experience like that without losing people, you can do pretty much anything, because all you need to do is to remember back, well, what did we do? Can I transfer that learning? And eventually we did get in out of it. You know, the boat had to go for a full refit. Everything on it was broken. Every glass, every plate, all the lot of kit. But walking up to the Capitanery or whatever it is, I fell 6 times. Walking up the pier because it wasn't moving and I anticipated that it would. So very clearly take that and you transfer it and you look at the opposite extreme, the one of sheer joy. If you're teaching somebody to sail, and I've taught hundreds, if not many, many more, you can show them where to look, but they must see for themselves. As a teacher or as a lecturer or whatever it is, it's about facilitating the process. It's not, you're not transferring knowledge from a great height down to a lowly being. You know, you're just enabling, right? And from that point of view, no explanation will be satisfactory. But once that feeling is engendered, no explanation is required. So if you can get somebody sailing full and by, in other words, close to the wind, and they have the wheel or the tiller in their hand, and they can see that with a very small adjustment of one finger, they can turn this 15-ton boat. You know, it's like a hole-in-one for a golfer. You know, it gives you that feeling of elation that just comes up through your body, and you feel as if the energy of the whole universe is just flowing through you. And you know what? You're right. And, you know, you look across at the mountains and you love them, and you look across everything you see, you love. You know, you can feel it. You can reach out to it. You're a part of it, and it's a part of you. You know, we're all stardust, you know. But again, in terms of touching a little bit on Roger Callaghan and tapping, yes, I tap out. I tap out, and I would say I tap out pretty much daily. But also, if somebody gets a good kinesiologist, and I'm the way I would describe that is, it's like a vet for people, based on the knowledge that you don't have to tell the kinesiologist what's going on. You might be going in there for the stiff neck or the sore shoulder or whatever it is, because it's a whole technique, mind, body, spirit, a whole lot, all wrapped up. So the kinesiologist will deal with things that are on a priority basis, based on what your cells are telling them. But again, no belief is required here, because no explanation would be satisfactory. Yep. But when somebody can see for themselves muscle testing in action and say, oh, no, do it the other way. It must work the other way, and it can't work. Once you experience it, well, you know, you don't require it. You have no more questions, because there are no answers.
It's interesting that you mentioned the kinesiology. I'm a big fan. I've been recommending that for years. And funnily enough, I've just finished doing one of our new programs that we do on the app, which involves kinesiology. Fascinating coincidence, mm-hmm. about, you know, answering questions for yourself, making that connection. Going back to what you said very early on, you mentioned that after doing some of those early Mindstore courses, books became rather important. In fact, they became friends. I'm just thinking, as we progress the podcast, can you maybe pick out, I know books are important to you. My call setting this up, you directed me to a book, and I've been really enjoying reading it. Maybe three books, Paddy, that might inspire people, and maybe thinking about a way towards the beginning, you know, when you, in terms of your journey after Mindstore, you know, was there anything particularly you picked up? Maybe I recommended some books. One in particular maybe stands out. What about in the middle of your journey, a book that maybe stands out, and then maybe something you're currently reading? Would you be up for sharing those?
I'm lucky to have a love of books. I don't make enough time to read enough of them. But in terms of Mindstore or whatever it is, I suppose start with something like The Celestine Prophecy, about recognizing coincidence in your life, about awakening, just being more aware. And that's a fantastic book. And indeed, there are many other books in the same chain, but there is nothing like the original Celestine Prophecy itself. The massive message is contained in there. The best book I ever read in my life, but you have to be ready, is a book by Joseph Murphy, The Power of the Subconscious Mind. I had the book for 5 years. I attempted to read it on two separate occasions and for one reason or another failed. And when I read it, I learned nothing. And yet I can say to you, absolutely, if it's not the very best book I ever read, it's certainly up there. And the rationale, the only possible explanation that in regard to that is that in the previous 5 years, I had solved all the puzzles that was solved in that book myself. And of course, when you discover an insight or something that raises your vibration, right? The universe rewards you, because everywhere you look, you see it, right? And it's confirming and reconfirming and reconfirming, and your vibration is going up all the time. It's just ratcheting up. You're moving up to the next plateau, right? But you have to be ready. You have to be able to see and feel. And when the student is ready, the teacher is always available, be it in the form of a book or a person or whatever. And, you know, we all pray, well, I hope most of us do, for something in one way or another. But when you ask for something, you know, be very clear about it, and then listen for the answer. Expect an answer, okay? But don't expect an answer directly from God. The clouds part and a voice comes down or whatever it is. Expect the answer to come from possibly the the most unlikely source, somebody who you might come across that you don't hold in very high esteem for one reason or another, somebody that maybe you have judged and judged wrongly. You know, that's another thing you need to stop doing, judging, you know. Leave that up to the judges. But yeah. but you know, very clearly, it's just all about the people. Certainly a book that I absolutely love, and I have three copies because I like to keep one in my house in Ireland. I like to keep one in my house in France, and also on my book. A spiritual, no, Words from Silence,
yes,
by Leonard Jacobson.
It's
pure love. And I do have that on Kindle and all that. So I always have it with me, you know. And I go back to it with little passages, perhaps in the middle of the night, in the programming closet. And just open it at a page and say, ah, Jesus, you know, there's the answer. You know, because when you send it out there, you know, look for the answer. Listen, expect it to be the message, a multimedia message in any way, because it's something that will trigger you. Oh, Jesus, yes, now I remember, our click. Something that the penny finally drops. I mean, most insights are hidden in plain sight. They're there all the time. But we don't slow down enough to feel our way. We're passing through, you know, and people certainly have had a lot of trouble in the last 15 years or whatever it is with financial crash and whatever. But it's not about owning property or any of that sort of thing. You know, you're only a caretaker, because, I mean, if you have a piece of paper and it has your name on it, well, you know, that's fine. What comes with that is a lot of bills and gardening and and hassle with new regulations you're not familiar with. And, you know, but you need to start to see all past all of that. It's a facility and it's there for you. And if it helps you, and certainly sailing is my cave. When I go on my boat, whether it's I'm putting up a shelf or I'm sailing alone or with friends, you're never more lonely, Jack, than in a crowd, you know. And when you're alone and there's just you and you can just be, you know, you're just there and you're appreciating and you're sending energy to everything and you're taking in energy from everything around you, whatever. It's just pure joy. I have a thing on my boat that says, a little brass plaque that says, God does not deduct from our allotted lifespan the time spent sailing. And it brings me back my smile. It brings me back my smile. And, I remember years ago we were coming out of Beijing and we were having issues with the authorities there. They were causing issues. They didn't want us to bring certain things. And this gentleman, a good bit older than me, he came up to the same counter and he put up the item that was deemed to be a problem on the counter. And he said in a lovely voice, big smile, warm voice, and he said to the lady behind the counter, he says, now, he says, tell me, how can we make this better? You know, big smile, open body, I never forgot it. You know, to be able to be given these little nuggets and appreciate them, and you learn things like that in the Celestine Prophecy, or what was that other one? Paulo Coelho, The Alchemist. Yeah. What a lovely book, you know. What a lovely book. I've read it many times, and it's the best of all Paulo's work. There's no question, doubt about it in my mind. But again, you know, you don't have to understand things. You just need to feel them and allow them to work. And sometimes people will say to you, oh, listen, you know, I don't believe in that, or it's all this or that. But, you know, they're looking to knowledge that is old, right? To explain things, when in fact we're learning more and more. It's a quantum world, and in the quantum universe, things happen that we couldn't possibly understand at this time, and maybe in time we might get to understand more. But the power of being, the power of joy. I remember at one of your courses, Jack, you know, you were going on about something about vibrations or whatever, and the words of a Beach Boy song came to me, good vibrations, excitations. And I mean, Jesus Christ, about tonight, fantastic. Yeah. Because when you stop, you slow down, and you listen to the words, and you listen to them resonate, you know. And I use that word expressly, resonate. Those of us who had a classical education will remember what a resonance tube is. And essentially, for those who might have difficulty remembering, it's a large tube with a certain amount of liquid in it. And somebody is holding a tuning fork and they're banging the tuning fork and applying it to the tube. And, you know, you hear ding, ding. But when the tube is filled to the exact right point, and it has to be the exact right point, you get the point of resonance, and then you no longer get ding. You get a sound explodes out of the container and fills the whole room. It's absolutely extraordinary. It's amazing. It's what happened there, right? And you put in a little bit more liquid and it's gone. Okay, and it's the same reason that armies, when they're marching, once they come to a bridge, they will break step. Because the marching of all the feet hitting that bridge in time might cause the bridge to vibrate at its natural vibration, and the atoms will break their bonds and it'll just disappear into the water below. And so it's all about vibration, raising our vibrations and the vibrations of those people around us. And again, you don't do it because you're looking for a reward. You don't look to do it to show your skill. I'm far more impressed by people who speak to express rather than people who speak to impress. Now, I remember many years ago, I was learning sailing and there were instructors there with a big sailing school, Glenans. We had 1,500 members in Ireland at the time, which was quite a lot. I got the feeling that the instructor was conveying to me, well, certainly the message I got was, this is a black art and aren't you so lucky to have me to share little snippets from. And he did it in the most confusing way to keep it a black art. And that provoked me and angered me. And anger is an emotion that it can be very healthy, because anger provokes action. And you would hope that you wouldn't sort of go up and hit him. But maybe you can enlighten him in a way that doesn't diminish him, but allows him to grow. And that prompted me to get together a manual on how to teach sailing, not how to learn it, how to teach it, and how to make it simple, and how to... I'd say one of the great skills that I think I have, or I'm told I have, is the ability to translate for people, be it, you know, complex technical documents of 50 or 80 pages, or into simple language with short sentences in language that the receiver uses in common phraseology. I remember one time I thought I was a great communicator. What a fool I am. I suppose my ego was in good control in those days, and people used to come to me to say, well, listen, how would you handle this situation? And have you got an example of a letter you would use? Or, you know, can you give me some phraseology to go around this? And, oh, yeah. And I had some really impressive words. So my employer sent me on a course 2 days for communications. And, jeez, I was angry when I got this. Because that's a busy job. You know, I mean, that's 2 days out of work. Sure, I'm a great getter. Ego in full flow. I was so angry. And I couldn't have sent some of those other guys. But, oh, my employer was so wise. So I went away to this thing anyway. And the guy who was given the course got my attention straight away. And he says, you know, this is a course on communication. So let me give you your first bit of communication. I really don't care whether you listen, or you attend, or you do what. I have certificates here for all of you in the room, and if you want to just collect them and go away now, because I know you're busy, you know, you wouldn't be here. So just take them and go, whatever it is, because you see, I've already been paid for this course. So I don't give a rat's arse what you do. Oh, that's outrageous. Oh, I'm shocked, stunned, Whoa, you've got my attention now, mister. I'm going to watch you. I wouldn't miss a second. Well, just 2 days, I went back to my office and I called the staff together, and many of them more senior than me. And I said, well, you know, I really thought, you know, I was God's gift to communication. You see all these sample letters? And I just tore them down the middle, right? Dumped them into a bin in front of me. You know, I said, there's no point in using Irish Times language to Daily Mirror readers. You know, we need to refocus. Instead of saying things like, I should be grateful if you would, think of your typist. Shorten that. Please, would you? Right? And all sorts of very simple little nuggets that people could hang their hat on. And I said, remember that when you're writing something to somebody, you never know the circumstances in which they will pick that up, be it on a phone now tweeting or whatever, or from the doormat, from their letterbox. You don't know what has occurred in the moments before that. It could be a family crisis. It could, oh, God only knows the possibilities. So be kind. That reminds me that, you know, if you want to build a monument, the greatest monument of all is kindness. And if you build a monument in kindness, it will outlast you and all of yours, because it's the giving that will keep giving. But anyways, I'm wandering. I wander a lot when I talk.
You've been very, very kind in your sharing. I've enjoyed listening. It's banged on there. The time's just disappeared. You and I were thinking of a 20-minute call, but here we are, nearly an hour long. I'm really grateful for it. Before we maybe wind up, just a couple of thoughts come to me. Where is your boat now? You know, where have you got yourself in the world?
Currently, my boat is in Malta, and I moved it across from France. I opened up a new cruising area. We had a delightful journey on the way down along the coast of Sardinia and up then to the north coast of Sicily. And we had many lovely experiences, great meals and breaking bread together. People have been breaking bread together for thousands of years, and it seems to work. I don't eat much in the way of bread, but, gather together. Clearly, I'm going sailing again in the next couple of days, and I'll be gone for, I suppose, a month or so. And, I'll go up around Sicily or whatever, and I'll have some friends joining me from time to time. It's a lovely part of the world. When it's blowing a gale in the Mediterranean, you're still in shorts and a T-shirt. You know, it's fantastic. Completely unlike North Atlantic weather, where you're in your oilskins wrapped up tightly and holding on dearly. But people should remember, sailing is an exciting sport, but you need to be extremely careful. And I would say, in teaching people sailing, that you need to keep them safe. If they are safe, they can do it again. If they do it again, then you teach them how to enjoy their new environment. If they enjoy it, they will do it again. And if they do it again, they'll learn, you know. Yep. But again, it's just, we all help each other. That's the way the world is meant to be. And the more we do it, the luckier we get. Napoleon used to only appoint lucky generals. He was a little unfortunate in the world, but he gave us a lot of things. He gave us bistros, which was fast food in those days, and yep. He gave us pasteurized wine. But it's about fun and seizing the moment to make a difference, to go and find your smile and bring it back to your family, bring it back to your work colleagues. We're all energy. And we need to be generous with that energy, because like love, the more of it you give away, the more of it you have. And that's just it. It just works. That's the way it is. But you need to understand that from the inside. And you can do that with Mindstore courses. You can do that with the books and the people that you meet. Chris Sarkozy said, working together, everything is possible. And the people in France, they voted for him because they wanted change. They didn't want France to continue the way it was, but they wanted change for everybody else in France except them. And that's why it didn't work, you know. But we have to navigate through troubled waters at times. But, you know, attitude is everything. And with a good, warm smile and kindness in your heart, you'll find that you're lucky. You'll always have enough. You know, and if you need be it 10,000 or 100,000 to do something or whatever it is, it'll just manifest itself. It just fall into your lap and say, oh, right, there it is. But you have to work at it. You know, if you have a garden, you've got to tend it and to look after the mind. I'm honored to be able to call you friend. You brought great changes in my life, Jack. You enabled me to find good vibrations and excitations and all of that. And I hope to learn more and more. And I've been to, as I say, an awful lot of Mind Store courses, and they are life-changing. But you have to use it. You have to use it. And you breathe every day. Well, why wouldn't you program every day? Do you want to leave the future histories behind and let other people write the history? Yeah. If it's going to be different, it's up to you. But it's all in the now. There's nothing other than the present moment. And if somebody is not doing something that's bringing them closer to that ultimate dream, they should stop it and do something else. And eventually, they will find something that is bringing them to that closer to that dream, and to use the programming, because Jack Black says it only works, and I'm a believer. God bless you, Jack. It's been a joy talking to you.
Barry, thank you very much. Thank you for sharing your energy today. It's an absolute joy. So there you go, folks. Barry Horan sailing off from Malta in the next few days. Lucky so-and-so. Cheers, Barry. Thanks. Bye-bye.
I love the colourful clothes you wear. And the way the sunlight plays upon her head. I hear the sound of a gentle wind on the wind that lifts her perfume through the air. I'm picking up her vibrations. She's giving me the excitations. I'm picking up somehow closer now. Softly smile, I know she must be kind. In her eyes, she goes with me to a blossom room.
I'm picking up good vibrations. She's giving me the excitations. I'm picking up good vibrations. She's by my excitations. I'm picking up good vibrations. She's by my excitations. I'm picking up good vibrations. She's by my vibrations are happening.